Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. You hiking now, family, friends, solo?
I hike with a lot of people now. I mean, I got married in March.
Yeah.
Pete and I've been together for 3.5 years now. When we got together, one of the things that we thought we had as a common bond was we liked to hike. So I took him.
I hiked with Pete.
Yeah, I invited him to go to Lost Mines Trail.
Yeah.
And we got there, and we're hiking, and we're like partway through, and he goes, "This is not what I thought was hiking." And so his idea of hiking was walking Zilker Park.
Yeah.
Austin, you know. So it was like culture shock for him. He was like, "Oh, this is hiking, huh?"
Yeah.
Anyway. You know, after he and I got together, I bought my Jeep. I've got a rooftop tent. He and I go everywhere. We've hiked in Arkansas. We've hiked in, we've off-roaded both. We went through Redbud in, I think, Illinois. We've camped and hiked, like I said, in Arkansas. We've done almost all of Big Bend. Because we can take the Jeep everywhere. So we've hit just about every trailhead and every road. So we hike with group and each other.
Yeah. So you're pretty much always with someone then.
Pete now wouldn't let me even fathom going alone.
Yeah.
Let's do his research now. He's on all trails. He's looking at
You're fired from planning my vacations.
Yeah. Mike's fired. He's not allowed to plan anymore.
All I know is when I met Pete, it was on top of Baldy Peak, and he was not very happy.
No, because, I mean, when you research it, there's not a whole lot about Baldy out there, though.
Nope.
Right.
And we knew nothing about it other than altitude and maybe, you know, how hard it was. But, you know, you don't realize that every step you take, you slide backwards a half a step. You know, and you, and there's no switchbacks. It's pretty much straight up.
Well, it's true that's the difficulty of Baldy is that it's not in a national park, and it's not, they don't switchbacks that are perfectly graded at certain slopes and stuff. I mean, it is pretty much straight up.
Yeah,
I remember Teresa Henning helping you carrying your pack up that ridgeline walk that we had to do.
I've come a long way. And Mark just kept taking me to the edges. And so I've come a long way, but when there's cliff on both sides of me, like Emery, I'll do it, but my hands are soaked and I'm terrified, but the peak just calls my name. So there I go.
All right. So this next question is going to dictate how much longer this podcast is going to go. And what is your favorite Texas national park?
Oh, Texas. Probably Big Bend.
Oh.
I'm over Guadalupe. I'm over it.
Yeah.
They got a divorce a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Not returning.
No.
No.
Have you seen the park? Like, have you been out to the back country of the park or just
I've done almost all of it. I think the one I hated the most was Bush. I'm like, never ever am I doing this again. I've done McKittrick like 5 or 6 times. I've done Devil's Hall once, so I that one I will do again just because. I've done the Peak twice. I've done Hunters twice. So I'm just like, okay, I'm over it. No
what
about, more.
What is your favorite Texas state park?
I've only been to Palo Duro Canyon, if that's the state park. So I've only been out there.
All right.
I don't think.
Tammy, what about you? Your favorite Texas national park? And state park. And so far, it's not looking good for this podcast going past this question now.
We've been bend. There's just more options. And we like to go off-roading. I know that Black Gap's not fantastic, for off-roading. But it's a good beginner trail for anyone who likes to go off-roading. It's actually a great beginner's trail. But we really enjoy Big Bend. We go a couple times a year, every year, for sure.
Yeah. All right. What about Texas State Park?
I don't know that I have a favorite. I've been to so many and just I've never clocked them as, you know, oh, this is my favorite or oh, this is my favorite. I might have done just like one trail at a different park. I mean, I can't compare it to, you know, I've been to Big Bend Ranch State Park, you know, in different places like that. But I've only ever done like one, like I said, one trail.
Yeah.
Whereas Big Bend and Guadalupe, you know, I've covered almost all of it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to compare, I guess you could say.
All right. Laura, what about you? National and state.
Well, I'm going to start with the one you don't want to hear. You can cut it out if you don't like it. Banff National Park in Alberta, Canada has surpassed everything that I've ever experienced in my whole life. So that wins it all.
That's in Canada.
I don't care.
We said in Texas.
I don't care. I'm gonna say what
we're
I want.
We're in a different country.
I'm gonna say what I want.
This is Laura. Laura goes against the grain.
I know.
Yeah.
It might have said Canadians were welcome here.
That's right.
Hey, Canadians are welcome here as long as I have the edit button.
Oh. That's right. But no, that's been my absolute best experience ever. But as far as a national park in Texas, it's definitely Big Bend. Because it's not, it's partly the hiking, but it's partly just the experiences. Camping there is so different than anything in the Guadalupes. We day trip the Guadalupe Mountains so much. And Big Bend is just far enough away that we don't day trip it as much. So we camp, and that just makes it even better. And then the state park for me is actually Lost Maples. We went there in the fall once. I love Lost Maples, or no, in the spring. Being from the north, being from Indiana and missing maple trees, I love Lost Maples.
All right, Michael, what about you?
I would have to say no doubt that Big Bend is my favorite national park. And a lot of that is just because of the geological diversity of Big Bend, the laboratory of geology. I mean, everything from the beginning of this to the most recent volcanics, it's just fantastic. It's Guadalupe's are great, but geologically they're boring. It's all limestone. Mm-hmm. You don't look at so much limestone, but in Big Bend, it's so diverse and you know, the trails and everything are just wonderful. State park, you know, honestly, Jason, I haven't really been to very many state parks. I've done Caprock and I've done Palo Duro, and I don't know that I've done any other state parks in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
They're one of those.
Okay. Teresa, what about you?
Okay. It's going to probably depend on the time of year, because in the fall, nothing beats the Guadalupes. It's my absolute favorite. I love the fall foliage. It feels like home. It's just beautiful. I love Big Bend because of the camping experience. I love Terlingua. I love the hot springs. I love Lost Mine. And South Rim's one of my favorite views ever in Texas.
Yeah.
I just like that you can kayak if you wanted to. There's just a lot more to do. But I don't know if anything beats the beauty of McKittrick in the fall.
It is pretty.
So
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, our group, we've started coming. We've done this 2 years.
The Halloween hike?
Yeah, we started the Halloween hike. And so we haven't decided what we're doing this year. But the Halloween hike is so much fun. First year, we did Jason Mask. And last year, we did pumpkin heads and wore black.
Yeah, we're horrible.
Hey, so poor Pete, though, when we did that first Halloween hike, because that we showed up and he was like, wait, what are we doing? And he didn't know he was going to be the photographer and all the things. And he's like, okay, wow, this was interesting.
So one of our Big Bend hikes this year is going to be on the Dia de los Muertos. We're going to go down.
Oh, really?
De los Muertos. Yeah. You should come along.
We're doing
the whole Muerto thing, you know, the makeup and everything, mm-hmm. and just camp out and just have a good time.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah. And it's funny, based on y'all's answers, how well we get along. But, you know, my favorite is Guadalupe. If you offered the next 100 of my expeditions, it would be Guadalupe every time. But I've been to Big Ben. I understand. You're absolutely right. I just have a thing for Guadalupe. If I go anywhere else, I feel like I'm cheating on her. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, I definitely need to get out. I definitely, you know, Big Ben Ranch State Park. I think I'm, you know, missing out on a lot, but man, I just love Guadalupe.
Well, divorce is always an option. Jennifer can show you how to do it.
So this weekend we did a night hike up Hunter, and I didn't realize, like, I just forget every time how beautiful it is looking at Guadalupe Peak when the sun rises. Anything I've ever seen.
Hey, and this weekend, though, one of the things I've never seen, because we've done Hunter probably 4 or 5 times at least. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I saw this weekend was the obelisk on the peak was hitting the sun just right, and you could actually see it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this next question would be really important to our listeners, especially anybody new that wants to get into hike and backpacking. So you guys clearly hike outside of Texas, you hike Texas. You don't just hike. I mean, it's an adventure. You challenge yourselves. So how do you guys prepare for an upcoming trip? You know, just so you don't find yourself in a situation where, you know, it's dangerous or you're not ready for it. Because I definitely think physically, you guys probably don't turn back a lot because you're not in shape, but, you know, certainly, you know, the weather and stuff like that comes into play. But how do you guys get ready for a trip? Tammy, you want to kick us off? Because you have all these numbers and medals and stuff behind you.
I have a gear room kind of like you, Jason. Mm-hmm. I have all my gear in one room. I have places for everything. I have my pack, like, literally on the other side. What I'm staring at is a wall that has just backpack, 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 backpack. And so, you know, I choose the backpack based on the hike, you know, the difficulty level. If I need a lighter backpack or if I can handle a heavier backpack and go smaller. I always bring certain things. Like, I always bring an extra long sleeve or always bring my gloves. We learned from, you know, hiking the peak that one time. We all got up there. It was so cold, and none of us, except for me, because I had my Mylar blanket. Everybody else was freezing without their stuff because nobody had anything, because we didn't realize because we were so new at it, that when you got to the peak, it was like, you know, so much colder. Started. We had shorts on that night. Mm-hmm. And so I always have shorts, pants, long sleeve shirt, short sleeve shirt, you know, sunscreen. I plan for the worst. I will carry extra weight to make sure I have everything.
So you're not limited by your gear. What about just being in shape?
Well,
he's in shape.
He's in shape.
Yeah, I know. Like, you guys work out every day together. So,
yeah, I'm probably, I'd work out. I don't work out with everybody else. I do my own thing. I've been a runner for most of my life, which is what most of this stuff is. And I kind of stopped running as much because I started working on strength. One of the things was, especially after I met Mike, you know, he's always like, your legs are what carries you up the mountain. It's not the cardio, it's your legs. And my legs weren't weak by any means, but I started really hitting the gym as far as lifting heavier and getting stronger. And I've noticed a difference. I'm much stronger to get up the mountain. So I do 5 to 6 days a week of weight training. I do cardio 2 to 3 times a week usually. I used to do HIIT with those guys all the time, but I stopped doing that because I wasn't seeing the strength gains.
No.
I wanted strength gains. I wanted my legs to be stronger going up. So my cardio has gone down just a smidge, but I wouldn't say a ton, you know.
No.
But I work out 5 to 6 days, sometimes 7 days a week.
Okay. Laura, what about you?
So yes, I work out all the time. I work out regularly, but as far as actually planning for a trip, I defer to Teresa. I don't know. I text her on my phone and I say, Teresa,
what should I bring? And she sends me a list and I pack it. I'd like to tell you I'm lying. I don't want to plan. I just want to go and somebody tell me what to wear, what to take, and I'm good to go. And that's what I do.
Hey, Teresa, if we take an overnight trip, she will have three bags. If we're going to be gone for a week, she'll have three bags. I mean, you know, she brings everything she owns.
And lip gloss. She always has lip gloss.
Yes. But no, I don't. I don't put a lot of thought into it. I make sure, like, I always have my rain gear. It's always in my pack. Like, I always have a light. You know, I always have food and stuff like that. But that's just standard. And I really only have two packs right now. I haven't switched to ultralight, and I probably won't, because I'm not sure I intend on, like, camping on a trail. I've kind of made up my mind. I want to go in, do my thing, and camp in a tent. I'm good.
Glad you brought that up, though, because I know I bought the same pack that you had when you went up Balding with us.
Oh, the ultralight.
I love that pack. And there's a saying, both in alpining and in the military, that ounces equal pounds and pounds equals pain. Me and Sean went and did Whitney in California. Yeah, it's the tallest in the lower 48, 14508. We weighed our packs at the bottom. Mine was 42 pounds, camping overnight. And that is daunting. I mean, it is brutal. I can take the same gear. When I came back, we both made a commitment that we were going to go ultralight. And so I went ultralight, sleeping bags, everything ultralight. I can take, if I were to go back and do Whitney, I could take the same everything that I had on Whitney that I took with 42 pounds, and I could do it with 22 and better. I mean, you know, I took the stuff up, my bag, sleeping bag and stuff that I took up Kilimanjaro. It was less than a pound, and it was weighted like minus 15 degrees, and I was toasty. In fact, I was hot. I mean, the gear has gotten such advanced now, you know, that you can, that allows you to do that. And depending on how much you hike, and those that are going to listen to this, you know, I mean, think about the hikes that you're doing and think about the weight of the gear, how long you're going to be gone and stuff like that. And I can only stress to people that, because, you know, you get on the Facebook pages and people are always asking, what kind of shoes, what kind of this, what kind of that? Generally, I find that in gear, you get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. I invest. I do not chinch on my gear. I will pay top dollar, because if you're going to really hike, if you're just going to go, you know, once, twice, and then give it up, you know. But if you're going to do it like everybody here, seasoned hikers, and we're not going to quit hiking, you know. So invest in your gear. Invest and spend the money on something that you really, truly love to do and plan to do. It'll, you know,
I think for us hiking in Texas, the majority of our hikes are probably in Texas. If you don't, I don't want to say completely focus on going ultralight, but trying to save the weight, because most of our hikes and backpacking trips, they're big water carries. This isn't like California or on the AT where, you know, you're crossing a stream, or Colorado where you're crossing a stream every, you know, mile or so. So you really, if you just not focus on ultralight gear and just grab some gear, and then plus the water carries that we have to do, I mean, you're going to be miserable.
Yeah, you are.
You know, so that's what really triggered me into, I don't really say counting grams, but yeah, counting grams. I mean, like, my base weight is right at 10 pounds, a little less depending on, you know, what I'm getting into. But yeah, I mean, the water carries have really forced me to really focus on that.
Water weighs 8.4 pounds per gallon. So if you're recommended to take a gallon of water, that's eight pounds.
I would say, I mean, one of the things I wished I would have known more about before we did Killy was that.
Yeah.
The weight of stuff, because I didn't realize how much those extra pounds matter. So I had the ultralight pack and things like that, but I didn't go into getting it way, way down there. Then when you have to carry 4 liters of water, and we hiked for 9 days straight, and, you know, by the end of the day, you know, day 4 or 5, you don't even want to put your pack on anymore. You know, you just don't even realize how much it puts on your body and your shoulders, and you know, to take it off, you're just like, oh gosh, because
well, I mean, it's no harder than Guadalupe pee.
There we go.
Yeah.
I think she'd punch you. If...
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, I'd never thought about the weight of my pack until I'm in Killy, you know, and I'm 4 or 5 days into it. And I was like, I wish my pack was lighter.
Yeah. Teresa, what about you? How do you prepare for a challenging hike?
So I research everything I can. I work out every day. I do have the ultralight backpack too. We make all the plans.
Yeah.
Laura drives. We organize our gear for at least a week ahead of time. We share bring. We arrange food. I mean, there's just a lot of planning. We do a lot of planning.
She says we, but really, she does the planning. She does all of it. She does the research and just tells me what I make sure I got to go get. And I make sure I go get the things that I need for that trip. Not kidding. But yeah.
All right.
Teresa's a huge researcher.
Yeah. I think, like, when I know that I'm getting into a challenging hike, you know, I'm not limited by gear. Like, I wish I could work out. I wish I would want to work out. But yeah, I can't. I don't want to work out. I don't know why.
Well, our workouts really are our social hour. So at night after we go to the gym, we do HIIT, all our friends are there. I mean, we have so much fun. It's just, I guess, the same as meeting at a bar. We just meet at the gym. And kind of prepares us for what we want to do.
So next question, what has been the most difficult hike or backpacking trip you've been on?
Killy.
And why is that? Is it, I mean, it's trail. It's not technical, but no, just the elevation gain.
Yeah. So I'll say, so we start out at 11,000 feet and eventually get to 16, but we took 6 days to get to 16,000 feet. You know, we went really slow to get to 16. Once we got to 16, that's summit day the next day, and you go 3,000 feet, 16 to 19, 3, I think it is, all in one night. And at 16, it's already hard to move, hard to breathe. You have to have your poles. I can't even imagine doing it without poles, and I hate poles. And it's cold. It's windy. You got Mike reminding you about how hard it is. But no, I mean, it really was. I'll say when we summited, we got to Gilman's Point. That morning before we started, they take our pulse ox every morning. And I had the best oxygen exchange. Mine was like 96 at 16,000 feet, which is crazy because everybody else was like 60s and 70s.
Oh, wow.
So it was just crazy that I was at 96. I wasn't showing any signs of altitude sickness, nothing. And I did take the Diamox. But when we got to Gilman's Point, which is like 18.5, 18.6, it hit me like a ton of bricks, like just hard and fast. Everybody sat down to eat, and I looked at everybody, and I was like, I can't eat. I don't want to eat. Do you want water? I don't want water. I couldn't. I just couldn't get it to.
Yeah.
It's weird because you know you need to. You're telling yourself, eat. Telling yourself, you know, take a drink, do this, do that. But I found a little corner and I sat in it while everybody ate. And then our lead guide, MC, he came over and he looked at my eyes and stuff. And he looked at everybody and said, we're done eating. Even if you're not done, we're done. Let's go. Because he knew that I was getting altitude sickness. It was setting. And he wanted me to summit. So we packed it up quick and he put me... And Casey was starting to have signs. Angie had signs already, but it hit me hard and fast. So we took off. When we summited, there was a few of us who summited first because we had one gentleman with us that we didn't know the family, the couple, but he was really struggling to get up. So a lot of people stayed back for encouragement and whatnot. But when I got up there, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I was still feeling like not well, but I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I started coughing and I wasn't thinking nothing of it. I was just checking out the peak, walking around, but I was coughing, but it was like a real like wheezy cough. And as soon as everybody got there, our head guide MC, he heard me cough and he looked at me and he goes, get a photo. You have to get off this mountain now. So I go over to the summit and I take my photos. You could tell in the photos, I don't feel very good. And literally while I'm taking the photo, I stop breathing. So I stop breathing. I walk over and everybody says I was so calm. Everyone's like, you were just so calm. You're like not breathing and you're not freaking out. But I walked over, MC hugged me. And while he's hugging me, I whispered, I can't breathe. And he like grabs my shoulders and pushes me away and goes, what? And I just looked at him and I couldn't say it anymore because I was literally going, there was nothing. Nothing was happening. There was no oxygen exchange. And I just felt a tear start falling down either side of my face. And you hear MC say, you know, get the oxygen, whatnot. And everybody's around me talking. And I remember people talking and people saying stuff. And people kept saying, it'll be okay. And I just remember standing there, just tears rolling down my face. I wasn't freaking out. I wasn't panicking. I just stood there. It was really weird and surreal. They got the oxygen. They got it hooked up. And as soon as the oxygen hit me, I just remember going, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Jeez.
Because I literally stopped breathing. And they sat me there for a little bit, let the oxygen do its thing. Felt so much better. I was scared at that moment. That's when the panic set in. That's when I was like almost like in a freak out moment. I was like, oh my God, what just happened? That was just so crazy, you know? And then MC looked at me and he said, you have to get off the mountain now. And so me and, one of the other guides, he put his arm around me and he carried the oxygen and he basically, we ran. And when I say ran, they made me run off the mountain. There's a section right when you summit, you going down, you have to scree. I don't think he's ever screed that fast in his life because we had to get from 19 down to 16. We probably did it in a good half hour, 45 minutes. I mean, we ran.
Jeez.
It was crazy. There were times where he and I almost fell and got hurt because, I mean, basically MC said as fast as possible. So we ran. We literally ran. I got down and I didn't have to be on the oxygen once we got to base camp, which was great. But, and I didn't really have any problems after that. I felt bad because we were supposed to camp in the crater, but I couldn't. And they already had our tent set up and everything. And Mike was supposed to camp, but then he didn't because he was worried about me. He didn't know if I made it, if I was okay. Nobody knew, you know, because they don't have radios out there. It's really kind of weird that they don't have some kind of radio system. They hope for a cell phone signal. And so, yeah, I mean, I summited and I wouldn't say health or anything was a factor, Diamox, nothing. You know, I talked to MC and he was like, you know, you might hike it again next year and nothing happens and you won't have any side effects. And it was just crazy because I was up there fine. And the next thing I know, I stopped breathing.
Jeez. So, well, we're glad everything worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was scary. Great. Yeah.
Michael, what about you? What's been your toughest hike?
Well, no doubt. I mean, I would have to also say Kilimanjaro. I mean, it's a dog. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, 19,330 feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the reason it takes 10 days is because there's 50% less oxygen at that level than there is.
Yeah.
Now, it's only 21% oxygen in our atmosphere anyway. I don't know if people know. You know, typically we're breathing 80% nitrogen, but there's, so, I mean, you know, acclimation. Even like when we go to Whitney and 14ers, like when me and Sean went, we went days ahead of time and we would hike up at Cottonwood Lakes and stuff, which is a little over 11,000. You need to acclimate yourself when you're going to go to altitude. And I think so many troubles happen when people just go there. Even at Guadalupe Peak, you'll see people. I mean, all of us season hikers just sort of looking at people like, you got to be kidding, right? You know, I mean,
yeah.
Down last time there was that lady that they had to send like 8 rangers to go pull her down. Remember that? Yeah. I mean, so at Kilimanjaro. Now, that was my second time on Kilimanjaro. And everybody's like, why did you do it twice? And for two reasons. One is Kilimanjaro is one of the seven summits, you know. It is a huge mountain. And there's a lot of ways to go up that mountain, but you're only going to see one side of that mountain. And it's so big. I wanted to see the other side. The second trip was designed specifically for me. No, that trek will never be duplicated. Nobody will ever go the same routes that we went. You know, when you hike, when you take on a challenge like that, I was 68 years old the first time I summited. I'm 73 now. But, you know, to me, that was the challenge. You know, I wanted to do something. Like you say, you know, I love hiking. I love the outdoors. My time, I know that I'm going to be able to continue to do this, is shorter than the rest of you guys, given that we all live. So I want to live. But anyway, so the first time I did it, like you might expect, there's a lot of concern. There's a lot of trepidation. Am I going to fail? Am I going to make it? Am I going to get sick? Am I going to be taken off the mountain? I mean, this and that. And pretty soon, you know, I mean, it gets in the back of your mind. And so once you do something, once you do something, that fear is gone. I've done it. I know, you know, I did it up there. I didn't do Diamond. I walked my happy ass up to the summit and came back down. And I thought, well, I want to go back this time. I know I can enjoy the hike more because that fear was behind me and I didn't have that. And so I was able to enjoy the scenery and enjoy just the experience a lot better. And the same crew that took me up the first time, the majority of the same crew that took me up the first time, took me up this time, you know. And so it was a nice homecoming. It was a lot of fun. But then, you know, I mean, yeah, it was designed, the trek was designed to stay in crater camp, which is at 19,000 feet. And the reason I wanted to do that, Everest base camp is only at 17,300 something feet.
Yeah.
So you can say, well, you know, it's a little bit of bragging rights. You know, I stayed at crater camp, you know, and it's thousands of feet higher than Everest base camp. You know, they had everything set up, but and MC said, well, you and Isu can stay, still stay down there. But I would not have slept that night because Tammy, Casey, they are my friends. I love them like sisters and brothers, and seeing them having to be taken down, I would not have slept. I would have not enjoyed it. And I would, you know, so I said, no, we're all going to stay at summit camp or at crater camp, or we're going down.
Yeah.
And so I went down and I'm glad I did, you know, I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's daunting. It's a major mountain and it's, you know, it's fun. I think what prompted me to do it, since we're on the subject, is, you know, just going to work and everybody saying, I did 14ers. I've only done one 14er. The only 14er I've ever done is Mount Whitney. I did it twice, but it's the only one I've ever done. But you're sitting around the lunch thing and everybody's saying, I went to Colorado and I did all these 14ers. So I said, well, screw that. So I had a friend that was working for me. She's an astronaut. She flew in the space shuttle and she had done Kilimanjaro and said, Mike, you should go do Kilimanjaro. And so she prompted me to do it. So then I could sit around the campground and guys, I went and did 14er in Colorado. And I said, well, if you like those little hills, that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, go do the little hills if you like them. But
is there going to be a third trip?
I've seen the whole mountain now. I mean, I've circumvented that whole thing. And not only that, but we went over to Mawenzi Peak, which is one of the highest peaks in Africa.
That was cool.
Oh, Mawenzi's awesome. And it's hardly anybody climbs it because it is a tough. You know, Jason, if you said, will you go with me? I'd probably do it another time.
Yeah. Why not? All right.
You should do it, Jason. You should do it.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool for sure.
One of the funny things, when everybody... Because Amy, the there were a couple from Salt Lake City that nobody really knew them. I knew them through one of the guys that was on my trek, Dennis. Mm-hmm. They were friends of his, so he hooked them up. And Amy brought a little amulet with her uncle's ashes.
Oh, wow. In
Jaro like 20 years earlier, but they informed her that it was against the law to take ashes up and put them on the mountain. And I got to admit that Amy pulled off the greatest diversion ever. I mean, it was the greatest diversion because I was sitting there over by Tammy and everybody was concentrating on her and who was surrounding her and stuff. And I looked over and there Amy was over at that iconic Kilimanjaro sign. She was just like, ashes all over the place. We got a great laugh about that. I said,
So as Tammy hits the ground, she looks over at y'all and winks and says,
now's the time.
Yeah, this version thing. But yeah, see a couple of pure gold, you know, and if anybody from Tanzania ever watches this podcast, you know what I mean?
Amy felt bad too. She was like, I felt so bad you were over there, you couldn't breathe. But I was like, it's now or never.
Yeah, but you know, that's assuming that her real name is Amy. So I think, you know. So Laura, what about you? What's been your most difficult hiking or backpacking trip?
My most difficult was Big Hatchet, because it was life altering for me. There was time because I threw a fit. There's just no other way to put it. I threw a fit. I took my sticks and I was frustrated. We were climbing and, you know, it was vertical. And so we were going up at about a 40 degree climb and my ankles hurt and I started to cry. And Sean was just ahead of me and Mike was just behind me. And Teresa, Casey, and Lindsay were up a little bit further. And I said, I can't do this. Every step I go up, I got to come down. He goes, what hurts? I said, my ankles and my knees. He goes, mine too. Mike goes, mine too. So Sean started to create switchbacks because we were bushwhacking. There's no real,
there's a trail.
Yeah. They catch it, but it's kind of loosey. And so he created switchbacks and he said, I want you to stay two steps behind me the whole time. And that's the reason I ended up getting up that trail, but it was empowering to make it to the top because it was hard for me. And you know, coming down felt amazing. We switched back again, coming down. But it was, I think that was the hardest thing for me because I grew the most. It was a pivotal moment when I went, okay, I am actually a hiker. I'm not just moderate hikes. I'm actually a hiker. The one that was the other most challenging actually that I was not successful at was Elbert. Mount Elbert in Colorado was a challenge for me, and it wasn't the hike. It was the snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the snow. It was falling into my knees, falling into my hips. I was frustrated. And I didn't have Sean saying, this is what I want you to do, you know, and who was much more seasoned. It was me going, I don't really, why do I do this? So I'm standing. I'm not Jennifer, by the way. I'm standing in the middle of all of this snow with my sticks. I'm up to my knees. My feet are wet, by the way, waterproof shoes, big lies. I'm standing in all the snow and my sticks. And I go, what am I doing? And why do I do this? I do this for joy. I do this, yes, for a sense of accomplishment. I have no joy right now. I'm frustrated and there's no reason for me to feel this way. And so I made it out of that snowpack. And then I waited and I knew Teresa and Jennifer were summiting and they knew I was not. Teresa, we had signal the whole time, by the way, phone signal. Teresa checked on me constantly. And she'd have to put her phone off and then she would put it on and check on me. Jennifer didn't check her phone the whole time, freaked us out. That's an whole nother thing. And so we, you know, I saw this couple coming down. And I told Teresa, I said, I'm going to go down with them. I'm going to get somebody to get me off away from this snow. And she said, okay, I'm going to keep going. And I said, all right. And it ended up being a dad and daughter. And I walked down with them and we went around the snowpack. And, you know, my thing was if I fell through the snowpack and was by myself, no one was going to see it. No one was going to hear it. No one was going to know that I was in the bottom of that snowpack because we had no idea how deep it actually was in that section. And yeah, you could feel the water underneath. So it's like, okay, wait, am I going to get myself in a situation where now I'm under the snowpack? So I followed them, and they got me off the mountain, and we hustled and got down, and I went, okay, that was challenging, but I'm not going back. I don't need to accomplish that at all. I'm doing Pikes Peak because I'm going to ride down. Yeah. I'm going to climb up and I'm going to ride down because I'm not going to walk down.
So the two podcast episodes before this one is my friend Jamie lives in Colorado, and it's two parts on us, you know, Texans going up and visiting Colorado and the safety concerns and what times of year and all that kind of stuff. Because, yeah, you don't want to mess around in the snow.
No, in the beginning, and that was bad. September or August and September are usually the best because the snowpack is gone and then the new snow hasn't come. We made some bad decisions. We did. We made some bad decisions. Separating was a bad decision. We should have stayed together no matter what. But
yes,
it was a bad decision for
us. But how many times do you hike? Like Henning and on Henning's podcast episode, on John's, on Sam's, we've talked about the same thing. We all know we should stay together, but we never stay together. Like when I'm hiking with Sam and Henning, they're already at the peak 5-10 minutes before I get there. And, you know, we had an issue where I lost my trekking poles and I was ahead of them coming down, and they thought I had fallen off the mountain because my trekking poles are, you know, laying across the trail or in these bushes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, once I finally realized I lost my trekking poles, I'm like, I'm not hiking all the way up there to get them. I'll just get some new ones. And so they thought like I died, you know, and so, yeah, stay together.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, like I love to hike with somebody who like is slower than me so that I can stay with them.
Yeah.
Because I'm never going to be at the top of the mountain the fastest. You know what I mean? That's just not who I am. And I like hiking with Mike because he is the shepherd. He will sweep the back, you know, when we do big trips that Mike isn't there, Teresa will sweep the back. But like, I like when Mike goes because I know that I'm not gonna hike alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But sometimes we just make decisions and we're like, oh, it'll be fine. Sometimes it's not fine.
Well, a lot of times it's not fine. I mean, we read about it all the time.
Exactly. Crazy things can happen. And so whether you have a weapon with you or not, you know, how fast can you get it out if an animal's coming at you? You know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. So. I was in Rainier and it was snow with my friend John. He should be a guide. And, you know, I have the ice axe, the micro spikes, and we were heading up to the Muir snowfields. And I turned around just because I couldn't focus. We're on this incline and I'm kicking in steps. I'm using the ice axe. And, you know, he's behind me teaching me, or maybe a little bit ahead of me. And I just couldn't focus. And, you know, then he's talking about, you know, we need to get through this part quick because you see those cracks in the snow. Now we're talking avalanche. Before we hiked, he goes, you know, don't walk next to the trees because you can fall through. He goes, you know, he has a big rip on his puffy jacket where his ice axe stabbed into him when he fell through one of those, I don't know what they call them, but, you know, the snow is 15, 20, 30 feet tall and you just fall, you know, you walk next to the tree and there it's not stable and you just fall through and die. Yeah. And luckily, his ice axe stuck into his chest and kept him from falling through. And I'm just like, oh my God, what avalanche, death? What are you getting me into?
I'm turning around.
Yeah, I had to because I didn't know enough to be scared, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, I just couldn't focus on what I needed to do. So yeah, we turned around. Literally. And he was very supportive. Teresa, what about you? What's been your most dangerous, sketchy hiking trip?
Definitely Mount Elbert. The three of us got separated. We did probably everything wrong that you could do wrong. We split our supplies. I didn't have a weapon. I had lip gloss. I did not have a portable charger. We split our stuff. And so once
you didn't have a charger?
I did not. Mine came in the mail the day after we left for Colorado. So, but you know, someone else in the group had one and I was just going to use theirs. Well, Jennifer and I went ahead, but I started having altitude issues like I always do. And so I told her, I'm going to go ahead and summit really quick and get down below the tree line. I've got to get a little bit lower. Well, once I got to the tree line, it was starting to get a little shadowy, a little darker, and I saw a large animal go across the trail in front of me. And so I backed up, I called Laura, and I'm like, my phone's probably at 20%. I have no weapon. There's an animal. So I went back down the trail, and I played AC/DC, and it looked like a coyote standing on the trail in front of me. It was just staring at me. So I backed up again, went above the tree line, starting to freak out a little bit, cried, called Laura, thought that was probably my last call. And then she said, find someone coming down, because I was dry heaving. I just wasn't feeling good. I knew there's an animal up ahead on the trail. So this couple, I could see them really high up in the snow. And once they got down to me, I asked them if I could kind of tailgate behind them to get a little lower so I could feel a little bit better. So they allowed me to do that. And I felt horrible leaving Jennifer, but I just could not. I just knew I had to get lower. And so that was probably the most scared I've been in my life. Just, I felt so bad. I had no weapon. Well, come to find out, Jennifer had tucked a chicken salad in my backpack because I liked it so much. Well, after climbing, it had exploded in my backpack. So I was probably like a walking snack for everything on the trail. We know now to just split, you know, the big stuff like the stove, the tent, but we need to all have our own stuff.
Yeah.
We just never expected to separate, and it just happened. So
yeah,
but yeah. But I'm still glad I summited it. I learned a lot. And then Jennifer made us a little worried at the bottom. I got down to the bottom, no sign of Jennifer. I probably get down about 4:30.
Yeah, I got it about 4, actually.
About 4.
I got in at 12:30. I made it back like I was like with the whole tree line thing. I got back to the car at 12:30 and was on the phone on and off with her and her mom, and you know, because her mom's calling me. And then very little conversation with sweet Jennifer. She's her own. I'm just having a good time taking pictures. So when she got in at 4, we walked back in. We put sandals on. Our feet hurt that bad. So we put sandals on and we walked back in about a mile to an area before we would have to climb in regular hiking shoes. And when we did that, we waited for Jennifer. I said, okay, we knew that search and rescue was coming. If we did not text them, we had a plan with them that search and rescue, if we didn't text them by 7 o'clock, they were coming to find us. And I said, okay, I'm giving Jennifer till 6:25. And it got to be 6:25. She goes, let's do 6:30. I said, okay, it got to be 6:30. I said, 6:33, 6:33. I'm calling search and rescue at 6:33. No one has come down. And we would see people come down and we would say, let us know if you see this person, blah, blah, blah. Okay, no one would see anything. No one saw Jennifer. Jennifer saw no one. It was so bizarre.
It was.
And at 6:33, she saw no one and no one saw Jennifer. And at 6:33, just before I was going to call, here comes Jennifer, click, click. Click. We see her little hat. We see her little skirt. And here she comes. And we're like, oh my gosh, she's here. And I mean, it was a moment like I'll never forget when I saw Teresa. And then when I saw Jennifer, and I said, we are never doing that again. We are never splitting up again.
I'm not a crier and I'm not a hugger. And I was that day.
Yeah.
I just collapsed when I saw Laura.
Yeah.
It was terrifying up there by yourself.
Man. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, so I guess that's your hardest, huh?
No.
No?
No.
What do you got?
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking. Thank you.